Is common sense returning to the United States Supreme Court? Michael J. O'Neill is our next expert guest. He serves as Assistant General Counsel at the Landmark Legal Foundation. Find them at landmarklegal.org, which we've got linked right now in the overview for this interview. What's up now? The Common Sense Supreme Court. Michael J. O'Neill, welcome once again to the airwaves in Texas.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Terry.
Does common sense suggest that President Joe Biden does not have the power to unilaterally forgive $450 billion of student loan debt without at least some authority from Congress?
Absolutely. He does not have it. And I think the Supreme Court was very clear in this. You just can't simply unilaterally wave a pen. The president can't wave a pen and direct his Department of Education to forgive $450 billion. It's hard to contemplate the amount of money we're talking about here, because Washington, D.C. throws around tens of billions, hundreds of billions. You hear all kinds of numbers. But I think by any measure, $450 billion is a big number. And President Biden can't simply direct his Department of Education to forgive $450 billion in student loans. Look, common sense says what? Says if you take out a loan, if you voluntarily take out a loan, you're going to have to pay that loan back. And the Supreme Court agrees with that and said, look, President Biden, you can't do this unless Congress speaks. They use their major questions. They applied a doctrine known as the major questions doctrine and said Congress has to give authority to the president to do this. He can't do it on his own. And I think that's straight in line with common sense.
Does common sense suggest that a state like Colorado cannot enforce a law compelling an individual to write website copy that she or he does not agree with?
Absolutely. The state does not have this power. Look, the First Amendment protects freedom of speech. Freedom of speech includes written speech. So if I'm going to write a letter, or if I'm going to write a book, if I'm going to write an article, if I'm going to write copy for my website, the state can't tell me what I can and cannot write. And the state, in this case, the state of Colorado, cannot punish me for refusing to write copy for something I fundamentally disagree with. Now, in this case, this individual who develops and writes content for wedding websites has a religious objection, a legitimate religious objection to same-sex marriages. And she's asserted that the state of Colorado could not punish her for refusing to write copy endorsing same-sex marriages. Supreme Court said, look, state of Colorado cannot punish you. The First Amendment, the right to free speech, protects your right to not be compelled to write something you fundamentally disagree with. And I think that is, again, common sense is the same way. We all want this. Think about it on the other terms. A state should not compel an African American to write racist stories or racist essays. If they want to write whatever they want to write, then they can, but they can't punish them for refusing to write this. Similarly, the state cannot punish someone who is Jewish for refusing to write Nazi propaganda. Again, we want to have these protections in place to prevent the state from compelling us to write something or to speak something that we fundamentally disagree with. A good common sense ruling in that case from the United States Supreme Court.
Michael J. O'Neill is our guest. He's Assistant General Counsel at the Landmark Legal Foundation. We're talking about common sense returning to the bowels of the U.S. Supreme Court, especially in three recent rulings. The first one we've discussed about the power of Biden to just unilaterally forgive $450 billion in student debt. Can't do it. Can Colorado or any other state force somebody to write copy they disagree with? Nope. Well, Michael, does common sense suggest that our colleges and universities cannot, may I inject, reverse discriminate against whites and Asians in their college admissions practices, i.e., can universities discriminate based on race?
Right, exactly. And that's what it boils down to. They cannot. And the 14th Amendment the United States Constitution prohibits discrimination on the basis of race. Here in this case, you had two universities, the University of North Carolina and Harvard, are two of our preeminent universities, using race as a determinative factor in admitting or denying applicants admissions to their respective universities. And the Supreme Court said, no, you cannot use race as the determinative factor. Again, think about this from a common sense perspective. How should an individual, for example, who hails from a country in Africa, who is particularly wealthy, very wealthy family, worth tens of millions of dollars, how should that person have a leg up against a first-generation Chinese-American individual whose family wealth is $50,000? If you're talking about disparity of income, if you're talking about disparity of privilege, how can simply using race be a determinative factor? And how can that individual, simply hailing from a different part of the world, have a special benefit for elevated over the individual who might have exceeded them in their ability, in their transcripts, in their resume, in their college SAT scores, or in their GPA? So I think you can't. The 14th Amendment clearly prohibits the discrimination on race, and I think common sense suggests as much.
Do most Americans agree with... Let's start back with the first question forgiving student debt. Do most Americans agree with that ruling, or do they buy the left-leaning mainstream media line that, you know, it was wrong?
I think most Americans agree with it. I say, with the exception of the narrow segment of individuals who graduated with, you know, useless degrees, who have tens of thousands of dollars of debt, I think most hardworking Americans agree with the Supreme Court there, and I think the numbers will indicate as such.
Was it just vote buying, in your opinion, Michael J. O'Neill?
Yes, I think it was to fulfill a campaign promise. And I think even Biden, you know, Biden said at one point he actually conceded that he didn't have the power, and then this is early on in the decision that he didn't have the power to do this. And I think he was, yes, I think he was buying those votes and ensuring that that constituency was satiated in taking this action. Yes.
So most Americans agreed with that decision. They don't listen to mainstream media. They're not being swayed by the printed word. Well, what about forcing the web designer to and compelling that web designer to go against her religiously held beliefs and force her to make a beautiful website for a lifestyle she found disagreeable? Do most Americans agree that the government, state, local, or federal, should not compel a person how to write, think, and act?
Exactly. And I think you're absolutely right. I think most Americans agree with that. Despite all of the screaming about this being a certain ruling about anti-LGBTQ plus, I think that this ruling is a victory for free speech in any way, shape, or form you cut it. And I think most Americans agree with that.
I've not seen the polls, but I'm sure most whites agree with the anti-discrimination ruling. Most Asians agree with that ruling. What about African? What about blacks? Have you seen any polling? Do most blacks agree that race-based admission was inherently wrong?
I've seen generalized numbers about these opinions, and they've been in favor of it. I can't specifically speak to that demographic, but I think that overall, again, these decisions will withstand the test of time. And I think when you look back on it, all three decisions are going to age well. And I think people will look back and say, these are common sense decisions. The court has returned to making smart, common sense decisions that are in line with the American people.
You use that term again, common sense. Common sense, common sense. Michael J. O'Neill, did Justice Amy Coney Barrett repeatedly use that term, common sense, in any of her concurrences to the recent Supreme Court decision?
She sure did. Again, that's in that loan forgiveness case. And I think she was sending a message. Look, the Supreme Court justices are incredible writers, and they know, and every word that they put in those decisions is meant to convey a message. And I saw that phrase repeated over and over again, and I think she was sending a message specifically to say, look, applying common sense to these decisions, and you're going to come out with you're going to agree with where we're coming from. And I think that has been lacking in politics, and that's lacking in our national discourse. And it's good to see the Supreme Court talking about it.
Oh, man, let's just begin to go out and cultivate and pray and ask God to shake his shaker filled with common sense over America and really around the world. Michael, in wrapping up here, looking into your crystal ball, what other areas should the U.S. Supreme Court invoke common sense?
Well, next term, they're going to have a case involving wealth taxes, and that can be a discussion we can have for at that time. But wealth taxes are you're going to look at the left trying to fund its massive, massive agenda with a new kind of tax, and that's a wealth tax. And that's taxing the equity in your home, taxing your unrealized gains, taxing your IRA, taxing your 401k, taxing your static wealth, not taxing actual income as it's earned and realized. So we're going to have a case next term that's going to involve wealth taxes, and that's going to be a big one to look at. And it's going to be it might be a little nuanced, but it's going to be important for the American people to be paying attention on where the court comes down on wealth taxes. And again, to use the term we've been talking about, hopefully they'll apply common sense and say, you can't tax something until I actually earn it and realize it.
Man, friends, how would you like to have to get a bona fide appraisal on your property every year and then add the increased value as an income and pay taxes on it when you haven't sold it, don't have the cash to pay for it? Oh, my goodness gracious, the left, the ideas they have to reach into our pockets and take more of our money. Well, in closing here, Michael J. O'Neill, where can our listeners find more information and how can they follow Landmark Legal?
Yep, you can check out our website, landmarklegal.org, landmarklegal.org. Check out our Twitter. I think where our handle is, Landmark Legal. You can just Landmark Legal Foundation on Twitter and find our Twitter handle and check out all the great things we're doing. I really think the website's the best place to go to get some substantive look into all the good work we're doing.
Landmarklegal.org. And for my Aggie listeners, if you can't spell that, just log on to my website. You already know how to spell my name, terrylowry.com. Find the link in the overview for this interview with our great guest, Michael J. O'Neill. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Terry. You have a great day.